We need a real investigation. I don't think we have one yet.
Yes, it's true. And yes, it is a crime.
Well, thank you, Cleta Mitchell. Thank you for that explanation. Really interesting and kind of appalling.
Thank you,
really.
Tucker.
Cleta Mitchell is somebody with great courage, and she's involved with your litigation and lawsuits and all of this stuff. She literally gave up her whole practice not to get paid. She saw how corrupt it was, how disgusting it was, how dirty it was. And I want to thank you on behalf of everybody in this room and everybody in this country. You are a hell of a lawyer and tough. And that's what we need.
Hello, I'm Cleta Mitchell. Welcome to this week's episode of Who's Counting with Cleta Mitchell, a podcast about all things having to do with elections, how elections are supposed to be run, how elections are sometimes run not the way they're supposed to be, and what we as citizens can do about it. So this has been a big week with the finally we get to November the 8th. And Election Day. Of course, what we've all learned is that we no longer have Election Day in America. We have election season. In some states, early voting starts in September. In Washington state, they start mailing ballots in September. They have no polling places. A lot has changed about our elections in the last decade. And I want to just talk for a moment. I want to look a little bit back at what's happened. But mainly, I want to talk about what we're going to be doing with the Election Integrity Network over the next year or 2 years. Last week was the second anniversary of November 3rd of 2020. Remember November of 2020. And many, many millions of Americans went to bed on the night of November 3rd thinking one thing had happened in the presidential election. And when they woke up the next day, they learned that something different had happened. And people began to ask questions and say, what did happen? Let's look at our election process. And of course, the people who have been involved in looking at the election process and who said, we don't think that everything was done exactly the way it was supposed to be, have been vilified by the current president of the United States, who went on television, national television last week for the second time, saying that people engaged in the election process as citizen and volunteer observers that are somehow a threat to democracy. Well, let's start with the fact that we live in a constitutional republic, not a democracy. That notion, that framework was rejected by our founding fathers. The left is intent upon trying to redefine and reorganize and restructure our country into a democracy, something that our founding fathers did not think was the best way for America to be built and to grow and thrive. But the president of the United States has attacked us. The media, the propaganda media, as Molly Hemingway calls it, they have been relentless in attacking and ridiculing the election integrity movement, writing article after article after article, doing TV segments, doing whatever they can do to say that we are election deniers. They make up names. They call us names. I don't know who comes up with all the names they call us, from Hillary Clinton's basket of deplorables, whatever you want to say. But the fact of the matter is, regardless of what the left and their propaganda media and this president and the Democrats in Congress, regardless of what they say, we're going to continue to be engaged in the election integrity movement. And I want to talk just a little bit about why it's so important from a constitutional standpoint. And on July the 4th of 2021, I had authored, and it was published in The Federalist, an article about consent of the governed as a principle in America's history and as fundamental to what we as Americans are able to do. The Declaration of Independence says that governments derive their just powers from the consent of the governed. That's us, the governed. And our Constitution gives us the pathway to express our consent or to withdraw our consent. And that is through our elections. The Constitution also provides that it is the state legislatures who are given the power and the authority and the responsibility for determining the time, place, and manner of elections in our country. And that has been a time-honored legal principle and practice for the entire history of our country. And now there is a massive effort on the left to federalize our elections and to decry the argument that states are still have the priority and the preeminence in the development and promulgation of the laws and the systems for conducting elections. We give and withdraw consent every 2 years. In some states, like Virginia, they give and withdraw consent every year. They have elections every year. And that's such an important part of how of who we are as Americans. That's why elections are so important. That's why we have to be engaged in protecting the election system. And so what we've done at the Election Integrity Network since 2020, since we started it in 2021, we worked with Virginia. And the citizens of Virginia rose up, got involved, created the Virginia Fair Elections Coalition. They had 18 task forces in local communities as of November a year ago, 2021. Today, they have approaching 100 task forces of varying sizes, varying strengths all over the state, of all over the Commonwealth, they would tell me, of Virginia. We have now taken what the citizens of Virginia did and what we helped with in a small way at the Election Integrity Network, and we have now exported that to other states. We've held 10 statewide summits, and one of those was a national summit to bring together leaders from across the country in key states. And we've held statewide summits to train people about what they need to do to recover and reclaim their elections and to be engaged in the election process. We published a year ago the Citizen's Guide to Building an Election Integrity Infrastructure, and you can find that and download it. It's at our website, www.whoscounting.us. And we've also turned the Citizen's Guide into a masterclass of online videos, short videos, 5 to 7 minutes each, on every aspect of election integrity and being an informed and involved citizen in your election process. So we've really, and we've done most of that just this year, in 1 year. And just last week, we have weekly calls with the leaders of the various state coalitions, and we had 27 states represented on our weekly election integrity call, the leaders' calls. And then within each of those states, they have weekly calls with their volunteers from around the state. I spoke just the other night with the leader in Pennsylvania, who told me that she had calculated and counted up, and they've had over 1,000 people in Pennsylvania who've become engaged in the election process. And some states, you have different groups doing different things. There's a wonderful group in Wisconsin, the Wisconsin Voters Alliance, and they have been busily reviewing the documentation of people who are adjudicated as incompetent or unable to take care of their own affairs and who should be removed from the voter rolls. And when that information is sent from the probate court to the Wisconsin Election Commission, what they call the WEC, the Wisconsin Election Commission, isn't doing what it's supposed to do and removing people who've been adjudicated incompetent from the voter rolls. But it's citizens and their efforts who are going out and finding this information and documenting. So I want to talk a little bit about what we're going to be doing over the next 2 years. We're going to have a massive effort to engage citizens in changing laws that we have identified as being problematic to making sure that we have accurate and fair elections in the states. One of the things we've realized is that this massive amount of voting by mail makes it impossible, absolutely impossible, for the election officials and the people who are working in the election offices to properly verify the identity of every voter who sends a mail ballot. In the state of Pennsylvania, it was on the Department of State's website just 2 weeks before the November election yesterday. Their data showed that the counties in the state had sent out nearly 250,000 ballots to voters whose identities didn't quite match the information on the voter rolls. And their explanation is, well, the counties will fix all of that before those ballots are counted. And so citizens have been calling every county to find out, what is your process for ensuring that you're verifying the identity of everyone who has received a mail ballot and has returned it to your county? And not surprisingly, the responses have been everywhere from doing it exactly right according to the law, to not responding to the questions when asked, to some counties decide that they'll just correct any errors that are in that they see on the ballots, that are the ballot envelopes. They just correct the errors rather than contacting the voter and having the voter come in and verify identity and correct the vote and correct the information. So it's all over the map. But the important point is someone, a citizen, volunteer, read what the Department of State had on its website, wrote a report, published it. It got people involved and engaged in calling their local counties and saying, are you verifying the identity of all these people who are voting by mail? That's an important step forward. But one of the things that is clear is that we have to make a principle and a priority of ensuring that the information is accurate and that the election results are accurate. Would it surprise you to know that in many states, the number of votes that are reported and recorded as having been cast in the election and used as a certified results, that number doesn't match the number of voters who are recorded as having shown up to vote and given credit for voting in that election? Seems like the number of votes should match the number of voters. And that number doesn't match the number of ballots. And so accuracy is something that is a really important principle for elections to make sure that we can all trust the outcomes. And so we are going to be working over the next 2 years to help states define and create and produce laws that require that the votes match the number of votes, match the number of voters, match the number of ballots. Accuracy in elections is critical because to us, a ballot, a vote, is the currency of our republic. It's how we give and withdraw consent as the governed in this country. Every ballot, every vote has value more important than a monetary value. It is the value of our constitutional republic. Every ballot. So we shouldn't be finding ballots under a copying machine in an election office or a group of ballots that have been stuck over on a table. Every one of those ballots, those are votes. Those are valuable. We have to make sure that we have chain of custody and the election offices can account for every single ballot and that the number of votes should match the number of voters. That's a very key important principle. We're also going to be involved in making sure that nonprofit organizations that pose as nonpartisan are really left-wing organizations that have embedded themselves in the election offices for more than a decade with funding from leftist foundations in the billions of dollars. We're going to make certain that we have citizens who are patriots, conservatives, who are watching. Who does your local election office do business with? What role do some of these left-wing organizations have in your election office? And we have had thousands. I think the RNC will report over 70,000, maybe by the time this is all over, closer to 80,000 citizens from across the country who have been engaged at taking at least one shift as an election observer, as a poll watcher, as an election worker. Now, this, of course, has been vilified by the press, but the statutes of the states envision that the political parties will watch each other at election time. So there's a provision in the laws of most of the states. Some states add the candidates can also have watchers and observers so that the candidates watch each other and the parties watch each other. And that's the way it ought to be. Transparency matters in elections. And the inability to verify every signature or every identified potential voter who votes by mail. That's a big problem in our country. And we need to make certain that the laws provide for that transparency, protect the citizen observer. The observers have been under attack for a year and a half by the Biden administration, the Biden DOJ in June of 2021 basically threatened all the observers, saying that the presence of observers is a threat to election officials. Well, let me tell you, we do not condone any kind of assault or threats or intimidation. I don't care if it's a voter, if it's an election official, or a poll observer. All have a right to be in the election process. All have a right to be part of the system. And none of them should ever feel any kind of threat or harassment or negative attitudes. But what has happened over the last year and a half is with all these propaganda media articles from the New York Times, the Washington Post, The Guardian. What was The Guardian in the UK even doing writing about the United States? We broke away from them 200 some years ago. But the attacks against citizen volunteers have been incessant, and they're unacceptable. The citizen volunteer, the observer, has a statutory right to be there watching. And we're not going to be intimidated. And many, many tens of thousands of Americans were not intimidated and are there probably even still today, watching the counting and the processing of ballots that come in after the election, which they should not be allowed to even be coming in after the election. North Carolina allows ballots to come in through November the 14th, next Monday, which is crazy. That's nearly a week after the election. So we've got our work cut out for us. We've seen, these observers have seen issues and problems. Observed, documented, reported. Observers are not there to change anything. They're not there to take action. They're there to observe. And if they see something, they say something to the chief judge or the polling manager, whatever the title may be, and they report it up the chain to the situation room where there are lawyers who can come and check out a reported incident or situation. I've heard of two similar situations in North Carolina in the past week. One in one county where someone brought in a group of mentally disabled individuals, probably from a group home, in a van, brought them over, registered them to vote, went in and basically voted all of them. Now, that isn't right. That is preying upon those vulnerable voters. The same thing happened in another county where a construction company brought in construction workers, Hispanic, got off the van, labeled with the construction company's sign on the door, and marched them in to the polling place and handed them pieces of paper, got them registered to vote, told them who to vote for, put them in the van, and took them back to their job sites. That is preying upon people who are not able to defend themselves. The question is, are they citizens? Did they provide any proof of citizenship when they registered those people? So this is the kind of thing that's going on. And all of it is being reported. And what it will do is it will inform us as to changes in the law to protect those vulnerable voters from the political operatives who are abusing and using them and only see them as a group of votes that they can ring out to support their preferred candidate. That's not right. And that's the kind of thing that our observers have watched, they've observed, they've reported it, and they're documenting it. And that's the kind of thing that is so important and why transparency is so important. We've had people who in Florida, where the group was able to document that they were only able to observe for about an hour a day the processing of absentee ballots. So all of those signature matching efforts that are undertaken by the election officials are not being observed by the citizens because they're only able to accommodate citizen observers for an hour and a half, 30 minutes a day. The rest of those go completely unchecked by observers. That's not right. Transparency matters. So these are some of the things that we've documented. And there has been more litigation challenging some of the failures of election officials to follow the state laws in several states. the law requires that there be an equal number of Democrats and Republicans as election workers or people who are on the canvassing boards or people who are processing and adjudicating absentee ballots. But in several jurisdictions, the election officials were filling Republican slots with Democrats. That's not right. The law envisions the parties watching each other, keeping check on the other. That's the way the law is written. So there has been litigation filed in at least three jurisdictions, one in Nevada, one in Arizona, one in Michigan, saying you can't do that. That's not what the law says. You have to make sure that there is parity. In some states, like Wisconsin, the law requires that the election judges be submitted by the parties in November of the year preceding the election. So the Republican Party of Wisconsin submitted lists last November for positions across the state as Republican judges for the election. And guess what? Many, many, many of those people were not even contacted and they're not even put into place. And others are filling those roles. So there's a lot to do. There's a lot to do. Litigation has helped. In Michigan, the Secretary of State, Jocelyn Benson, who was running for re-election, put out a manual, a guide to the election, telling people election workers how to conduct the election. And in it were errors, that instructions that violate state law. So the Republican Party sued. This manual was sent out before the primary last May, and she sent this all over the state, and the judge ordered that manual be withdrawn, and that a manual that actually complies with the state law should be reissued. That was over a month ago. As of last week, she has still not issued a new manual, and so the plaintiff sued her for contempt of court last week in Michigan, saying that the Secretary of State, who has made many, many public statements about how she's going to monitor misinformation, monitor disinformation in Michigan, and protect the voters from misinformation, she is the primary source of misinformation about the elections in Michigan. So again, we have a lot to do. So our goal over the next 2 years is to really by next year, to have statewide coalitions up and running in every state, in all 50 states, and to make certain that we have citizens engaged at the local levels all across the states. We're going to be working on federal legislation because Congress has, over the years, made it much more difficult, if not impossible, for the states to clean the voter rolls. And so we want Congress to change the laws and remove the blackout period so the states can actually keep their voting rolls up to date without having the federal government say, oh, no, you can't do that this time of year, and you can't do it this time of year, and you can't remove this. It's none of the federal government's business. We need to make sure that we need to get that changed. We need to strengthen the security requirements for those who vote from overseas, because I certainly thought the overseas Uniform Overseas Citizens Access to Voting Act, I thought that that was mainly military. But it turns out in 2020, 63% of what we call the UOCAVA voters, overseas citizens voting, were civilians. And now we've found out that there's very little verification of identity of those who seek to vote by mail or vote from overseas. They don't even have to register at an address that they've ever lived at or had any affiliation with. They could just register at your address, even though you don't know them. So we have a lot of work to do in Congress. Congress should provide to the states that these federal databases of citizens and people who are here legally be provided to the states free of charge. Right now, that states can't get that information, so you can't go check and see if those Hispanic construction workers are actually citizens or legal residents of the country, but they just voted. They were just registered and just voted in North Carolina last week. So the Social Security death database, the Social Security system knows within a nanosecond if somebody dies. That should be provided. That database is a federal database, should be provided on an ongoing basis to every state election office so that Anyone who dies is immediately removed from the voter rolls. There are things Congress has done to make things worse. We want to work on Congress to get them to make things better and to help clean and to make sure that our voter rolls are accurate instead of having tens of thousands of dead people and people who've moved. The same is true for the post office data. That should be made available on a regular basis to the state so that they can see who's moved and confirm that. And the registration of citizens to vote every time you go to get a driver's license or social welfare benefits, there should be proof of citizenship required. Right now, that's not required. And if you are the first-time resident moving into a state and you're registered in another state, they should have to sign a card that is then sent to the former state so that they can be removed from the state from which they've moved. So, look, there's a lot of work to do. It's tedious, but it matters. This matters because this is how we give and withdraw our consent. We are the governed. If we don't take charge of our election system and make sure that we are following the laws and that the laws actually do what they ought to do, which is ensure that we have accurate elections, that the processes are transparent, and that people are held accountable if they do not follow the laws by which the elections are to be conducted. Many, many times we see that election officials just disregard the law. Jocelyn Benson in Michigan is a good example. We see that they just disregard the law and they get away with it. And there needs to be accountability. So we need accuracy. The number of votes should match the number of voters. We need transparency. Observers should have the ability to watch every part of the process. And if any part of the process cannot be easily observed, we need to change it so that it can be. We need to reduce the volume, just the sheer volume of absentee voting. Because once you vote by absentee, there's no protection and guarantee of the secret ballot. There's no protection of those many, many people to make sure they're not pressured to vote for somebody because of whoever's looking over their shoulder and whoever is collecting ballots and maybe changing votes after the fact. There's a lot of issues with voting outside the supervision of the polling places, and we need to do something about it's impossible to be transparent and have observation when voting goes on for a period of months and months. So weeks and weeks. We need to address all of that. Voting is a precious right. It is a precious responsibility. It's not like being able to drive through and get a chili dog in the middle of the night. That isn't what this is about. This is about the way in which our basic framework of government operates. And voting has been treated as though somehow we have to make it so easy that nobody has to do anything. To lift a finger, we'll practically bring it to you, sit breakfast in bed, vote in bed, and we'll come and bring it to you and take it away. That's a recipe for losing our country. And so I'm very proud of the Election Integrity Network. I'm proud of the tens of thousands of citizens who've been involved and engaged, who are looking at the voter rolls, who are learning about the technology that's used in our elections, who are working to protect vulnerable voters, who are watching what's going on at the polls. Those are all the things that people have been doing all over this country. And we're going to be doing it more and more as we build this permanent election integrity infrastructure, as we build the Election Integrity Network. And I would invite you, visit our website, www.whoscounting.us, download our Citizens Guide, sign up. We'll get you connected with people in your state who are as concerned about the elections as you are. And together, we will reclaim America's elections so that every vote by every legal voter is counted accurately and that illegal votes are kept out of the system altogether. So with that, I just want to thank everybody who's been participating and listening this past year to our podcast and share this. Get other people involved. All elections take place at the local level. We have the series of videos in the masterclass. It's available on our website. Go look at the video that we've prepared about how to start a local election integrity task force. Get a few of your friends together and help us as we move forward together to make sure that America's elections in our constitutional republic are fair, accurate, honest, peaceful, and lawful. And with that, I say thank you. And this ends this episode of Who's Counting with Cleta Mitchell. Thank you so much for joining.
Thank you for listening to Who's Counting. The Who's Counting podcast is produced by the Conservative Partnership Institute's Election Integrity Network. It is filmed and recorded at CPI Studios in Washington, D.C. Help us grow this show by sharing this episode with a friend, and be sure to subscribe and to give us a good review. We need your word of mouth because big tech can't be trusted and tries to cancel us daily. Help fight back by visiting whoscounting.us and sign up for this podcast, for our newsletter, become part of the Election Integrity Network.